sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I am not. Maybe I'm a witch. And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week we're reviewing Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then go to a deep spoiler analysis. But John, we are still in January. I believe when this episode comes out, it feels like it's been 6 months. But if you want to listen to any of our past episodes, you can do that on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. We just reviewed Drop. We dropped it.
It just dropped.
Yes. And one of our most popular episodes. So
just over here making noise.
Yeah. Shh, we're trying to record a podcast.
Hold on. Otis, drink more water. I'm just kidding.
So, Tales from the Dark Side, John, you insisted, begged.
I've been trying to get you to watch this for a while. And I feel like now that I finally got you to do it, in retrospect, we watched too many movies similar that were a little bit better.
Oh, interesting.
It's also, and I have such a soft spot for this because I did see a handful of episodes of the original series, and I did watch this movie when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed it.
So there's only like a 83 version, right? That's what you're referring to? I just assumed...
The TV series, yeah. There was a television series.
I just assumed it was, like a show that took place in the 60s and then it got revived in the 80s. But that's not true. This was like...
No. I guess we both did extensive research mm-hmm. 5 minutes before recording this and found out that George A. Romero created this show back in like 83.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it got canceled after 4 seasons because they're like, it's run its course. Nobody's really watching it anymore.
Oh, it ran. Do you know what network it ran on?
LGBTQ.
Yes. The LGBTQ network. You may have worked on the lot. At this show, you could be working in the studio where this show was produced, or I could just be making that up.
Interesting.
Do you want to take a guess? Do you want to work?
CBS?
No, Apple. No, CBS.
Netflix. Oh.
They own the whole town. Yay. Yay for movies. CBS network. That's a surprise.
Interesting.
Anytime CBS airs anything that's remotely interesting to me, that I'm always deeply surprised.
Now I'm curious on what lot they shot it on.
Ah,
interesting. Could have been Paramount, could have been Radford, could have been, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll never know.
Well, there you go.
But with all that being said, I guess they made a movie, an anthology. I would say Romero loves the anthology format, right? He's Creepshow, Tales from the Dark Side. Is there anything else he was involved with that was anthology? No.
The Dead series, you can...
He loved this.
If you felt so inclined, you could watch all 9,000 of them back-to-back. Yeah. I feel like there was a Dead series, too.
A what?
Like, I could be wrong.
What do you mean? Like a Romero Night of the Living Dead TV series?
Maybe.
That's actually a good idea. Maybe. I don't know why nobody ever thought of that.
I don't think we've ever had like a zombie TV series, huh? No. Let us know in the comments below if there's ever been a zombie TV series.
I like slow zombies, like walking zombies or how would you say it? Walking Dead.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And you can be scared of it, so you can like fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I guess this was another movie, but he did something called Dead Time Stories, and there's several
TV show.
No, it's like two movies were anthology movies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He loved it. What was that other thing? The one he did with Carpenter.
Yes.
Right.
No, Argento.
The one Mark Hamill.
Was it also with Argento? Or maybe Carpenter?
Oh, maybe.
Too.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Evil Eyes or Evil Two Twin Evil Eyes, something like that. I don't know. I reviewed it. You can look it up.
Yeah. Is that what it was
called? It was called something Evil Eyes. Was it Evil Eyes?
God, I don't remember.
There's no way to know. Nobody knows.
I know I ended up buying the DVD just because I found a cool version at, shit, this was a long time ago now. Amoeba. Two Evil Eyes.
Evil Eyes. There you go. Yeah. As opposed to One Evil Eye.
And it was, you're right, Dario Argento and George Romero.
Yeah. When he just needed money, he was just, whatever. I'll do whatever. I'll sell my name on anything.
I think I thought Carpenter was associated with it because of Adrian Barbeau.
And what's his face? Fuckboy.
Harvey Keitel.
No, is it Tom Atkins? No.
Is it? Oh, Tom Atkins.
Fuckboy Tom Atkins. Everybody wants to fuck that guy.
And was he involved with that thing? The one with like Mark Hamill? Also, eye involved. Mark Hamill has like an eye that he got from somebody else. And it was like a serial killer's or something. Body bags?
No, I think that was only Carpenter. But I think Carpenter, like, man, we could totally fall down a rabbit hole of 80s anthology series. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Like, all these horror guys love this format.
Not to mention, what was that series of movies where they got all these guys and they were like more often than not terrible?
Yeah. Something Master of Horror.
Yeah.
And for this, it only lasted, I think, one or two seasons, but then it changed it to Fear Inside. They changed the name of it, but it was the same fucking show. I mean, it's a cool idea to get, you know, directors that are famous in the horror genre to make, you know, a project or something, make like a short.
Yeah.
Just that the scripts weren't very good.
No, they were pretty bad.
Yeah. Which is kind of like,
it's man, we set the standard. We should not have ever watched Blood Ride.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. Everything's bad
after that. Yeah. Yeah.
Go watch Blood Ride.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, okay, cool. This is what I talk about. That was just the preamble to our review of Tales from the Dark Side. John, do you want to give us a plot in 5 words?
Johnny. 5 words. Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, 90s really loved its noir.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You ever think about that? Man, there was like just a chunk of the 90s, like shows like Silk Stockings. And what was the one? The dude is a vampire, but he's also a cop. Remember that one?
Yes.
Night or something?
Shadows. Snow.
Anyway.
Dark Shadow. No. Why do you do this to me? Now I got to find out what it is.
Like, with the guy that looks a lot like
European porn
famous
star.
Actor. Yeah. Anyway.
Vampire detective shows. Let me do it quick.
Twilight. That's what it was called.
Show from the 90s. Forever Night. There it is.
Forever Night.
There it is. Yes.
Yep. Not nearly as scary as you think it'd be, folks at home. So don't.
It only ran from 1992 to 1996. I felt like it ran for like
that show was on forever.
Yeah, like 20 years, right? Yeah. Like I felt like it was always on.
It was a sexy vampire show. It was just about sex. All right,
Silks. Well, doesn't Silk Stocking has the same premise? It's like a more sexy Moonlight show, right?
Yeah, but I don't think Silk Stockings had anything to do with, like, it was just a sexy show. Like a sexy show about murder.
A sexy show about murder. That's like every show now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was in Silk Stockings? Sorry, bro.
I don't think anybody famous. I remember just like trying to watch it to see if I could see boobs, but it was not a rated R show.
Oh man, I miss these. Oh, it's on Peacock. There you go. Congrats, Peacock.
Let us know if you want us to review Silk Stockings.
We just changed our format to a Silk Stockings fan podcast.
We'll let you know if there's boobs
eight
in it.
Seasons. And eight seasons of this. Jesus.
Our new format is, we'll let you know if there's boobs, butts, peens, or vagines.
Ugh, and they're all like 48 minutes.
Damn,
I'm out.
I'm out.
But let's do what we always do. Let's measure time as we do. How old was Deborah Harry?
Hold on. Don't. That was one of the
things. Oh, shit. We're not done. Okay. I'm not sure we're done. Yeah, go. Yeah. Continue. My bad. No.
Coming in at number 2 for Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, Kaiden's Tales from Dark Side.
Yep.
And coming in at number 1 for Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, Debbie Harry was about 45.
There it is. That's what I'm talking about. Deborah Harry is about 45. I don't know if anybody knows that, but Deborah Harry is a lot older than you think she is.
Yeah. And then Matthew Lawrence was like 13 or something. I don't know, tops.
So we like to measure time in Harry's, as we call it.
Deborah in Harry's.
Yeah. And what age she was, how old she was. It never ceases to amaze us how old she is the year, whatever year. 45. Could not believe it. Absolutely amazing. Alrighty. Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. Do you want to give your first thoughts, John?
Okay, I have a super soft spot for this movie. It was one of my favorite movies growing up. I think because it was a lot more palatable for, how old would I have been? Like, I don't know, probably five-ish when this movie came out. It is scary. It is pretty gory, but I don't think it's like terrifying. Even though I did have nightmares about that mummy, I did not like that as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think the gargoyle also like scared me.
Yeah, if I would be very young to watch.
Yeah,
these things.
I remember the cat one not so much because I didn't understand like neo-noir style things as a child. I was like, this is black and white, it's boring. Like,
yeah,
like, just to grow up and it's still a little bit boring, but
you were just like, no, turn it off, mom, I don't want to watch this. Put on Caligula or put on something I can watch. Okay, yeah,
put on Girls Gone Wild.
A Siberian film. Anything else?
I just said I really loved it. And it's also, I think, my introduction as a child to like Steve Buscemi, and I already knew who Christian Slater was.
Pump up the volume.
Pump up the volume. Yeah. Gleaming the Cube. Have you ever watched that movie? I love that movie. You know, it was the first time I think I'd ever saw Julianne Moore.
Oh yeah. It's the first movie.
And then everybody else, like one of the main characters in the first story, I thought that was Mark Margolis. I was like, that's super cool, but it wasn't. Can you guess who I thought it was? Alice Drummond and William Hickey, who I think were always 100 years old.
Yeah, they pretty much have always been that age.
William Hickey died at 69. I don't want to throw shade at the dead, but he looked really old.
Yeah, he was already really old in the 90s.
I thought he was like in his 80s. Well,
he must have done Christmas Vacation around the same time. He looks exactly the same, right? Like Christmas Vacation is like 80 something, right?
So Christmas Vacation came out in 89 and this movie came out in 90, so exactly the same time. Yeah,
he looks like he literally left that set to go to this set and it's the same person, put him in a wheelchair and be like, here, be old. I don't know.
So he would have been in his late 50s or something when he shot Christmas Vacation. Late 50s, early 60s.
But how do we measure time in
he
Deborah Harry's?
So old. He can't, because Deborah Harry looks timeless and this guy has looked ancient his entire life, I guess.
I guess so. Was it? He was married to Alice Drummond, right? Is that correct? Was he? They're always in each other's shit, right? Like, weren't they like a...
Yeah, I thought so too, yeah.
They were... Maybe I'm making that part up, but I feel like they were always in each other's movies. Or maybe I'm just always thinking of Christmas Vacation all the time because they were together. Weren't they like a team or something? Like a couple team, comedy team or duo or some shit in the ancient times?
I know, I didn't really ever think about that.
I think so. I think that's where he kind of got his name.
Her husband was Paul Drummond.
So no. They just were always in each other's. Yeah.
But they got divorced in 1976, so there's a possibility.
He stuck his hickey in a drum. And yeah. I want you to imagine these old people having sex.
Well, that's the thing. They're not even old, right?
They're not. Yeah, they're not even old.
That's kind of blowing my mind that he was like, maybe. So I know this is not Tales from the Dark Side, but that he... I'm dropping stuff. So we'll listen to drop because I keep dropping stuff.
Yeah.
I guess he was like 16.
He was on variety shows.
162.
The George Bernard Shaw show. You remember that?
Yeah, of course.
This is like ancient history.
Yeah, he was only like 61 when he made Christmas Vacation.
Right. Yeah.
That for some reason is not tracking with me. He just seems so old.
I see who anyway. Mark Margolis is. I didn't know his name, but I know I'm looking at him now.
Oh, yeah. I think most famously, has he passed?
I believe he did.
No, right? No, he did pass away. Yeah. He passed away a couple years ago, yeah. I think he became very famous after, well, he was one of Mammoth's guys, I think, right?
I am not sure. I remember him when I was younger, when I saw the movie Pi, Aronofsky's first movie.
I was going to say he's one of Aronofsky's mainstays too. Yeah. He's been in like almost every Aronofsky movie.
I'd say his best movie.
I was going to say he was also in Scarface, but I think everybody remembers him from Breaking Bad.
Oh, was he in Breaking Bad?
Yeah, he was the guy, the former mob or boss of whatever that he was in the wheelchair.
Jesse.
Remember when you saw Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When Giancarlo Esposito goes in to go talk to him and he's ringing the bell repeatedly and then he blows up and that's when.
Yes, I'm sorry. I pulled up.
Yeah, he's the guy.
The face. Yes, I remember. He was in Ace Ventura too. Damn.
Yeah, yeah. I think he played the.
I did not know.
The landlord? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
And that's and he comes out and tells from the dark side.
We're jumping all over the place. We're just talking about actors, but.
He comes in, tells on the dark side. He has no speaking lines. He plays a butler, and he's not a part of the main story.
I had an interesting thought. So this movie, I would say that I'm pretty lukewarm on it because it looks TV. Literally, the first shot we see is like they're just panning down like you would. It's shot like fucking TV. Like they're literally panning up and down this neighborhood, the street and everything. And it's just like, this is like the most TV-ish way to frame and shoot this. And it was very boring. Like cinematography.
Oh, okay.
Not the movie.
So that's why I think that's why I kept saying like Romero tried to keep the essence of the television show. And I think that's the way everything was kind of done. Like a pseudo-noir show or movie or something.
I feel like, man, anthologies are really tough because you have to tell a story in a small, finite time, and then you kind of have to like make it land and be impactful, right? Yeah. My thought was going. Do you think now in this like time where like TV is probably more prestigious, gets bigger budgets than movies, you know? But there's a class of movies that are above TV, of course, right? But more or less, I feel like TV gets bigger actors and they get, you know, more bigger budgets. Do you think they could do an anthology series with money behind it and it would work? Has anybody tried that? Because I feel like all this movie really needed was probably just a bigger budget. Because I did like the stories. I liked the movies. I liked the actors. They're all very notable and has a good cast. They're well written, but like for me, it's just like it's unaesthetically pleasing to watch because it's very TV-ish.
Yeah, it's like some of the locations were really cool, but you could tell like the design was a little weird, but it's also very 90s.
Right. Yes.
But like everything was a little too like James Remar's character lives in like the slums, I guess, of Los Angeles. I don't know where that's supposed to be, but New York. I don't know. But there's a bunch of trash piled up outside, but it's like perfectly placed trash.
Yeah, because I'm thinking like the last thing I could remember was they revived Amazing Stories when Apple TV Plus first came out, and man, that was dog shit. That was not a very good show. But I imagine they probably had a budget because Apple didn't give a fuck. And Spielberg put his name on it. That was his anthology series from the 80s. And it didn't.
Which was a fun 80s anthology series. And then, every time they try to reboot something, it turned into shit.
I guess because there's like, they have to budget these a certain way because there's such uncertainty, right? Because anybody could imagine a big idea, come up with a big idea, just have whatever money behind it or whatever. But I still wonder if there's a way for like to turn these anthology series more into like a prestigious type show in the vein of like something around HBO where it's taken a little more seriously, serious budget, serious like creators behind a show like this. I wonder if it's even possible for this to even exist. I don't know.
Like like maybe there's like a mainstay narrator that presents different stories. He could be dead. You could be in his crypt and he's giving you stories from the crypt or tales. And no, that won't work.
They tried to revive Twilight Zone with Jordan Peele. That went nowhere, right?
And then they're going to revive it again, I think.
That's crazy.
Or I don't remember what it is. Like, Battle Limits, one of the big ones. And I'm like, oh, okay.
But there is a sort of, like, I don't know. Like, how do you feel about Twilight Zone in general?
I really like Twilight Zone. I think the original series is excellent. The reboot in the 90s was pretty okay. And then I do like the movie. Fuck John Landis, but I do like the movie. Just saying that out loud in case everybody's wondering. Yes, I do think he's directly responsible for those people's deaths.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I feel like you see how, like, there's a bit of, if you go back and watch old Twilight Zone episodes from, like, whatever, the 50s, 60s, they still hold up. They're still invariably creepy. So it's like, there was something, like, missing. So I guess it just depends on the creator, right? And Romero tends to be in this wheelhouse where, like, he can, a lot of his stuff was very, like, when he was, you know, coming up, he was, like, very serious, kind of, like, low budget takes and stuff. But I feel like as his work went on, it kind of, like, I feel like it grew to be kind of, I don't know, less serious, less
yeah, he, like, really liked campy stuff. Really, I think he really stuff. Liked, like, I think he was very influenced by creature features of the 50s, and, like, you
fucking
know.
Loved Stephen King. He's, like, his biggest champion in the 80s. He did so many things. Yeah. He's adapted so much of his work, you know.
And then I would say also in this era, you remember that show Monsters, I think is what it was called?
Yeah, I remember it, yeah.
This is kind of the same wheelhouse. Like, it's almost like if they had made a movie of Monsters, it would have probably looked a lot like this movie too, right? It had the same sort of weird, like, yeah.
Yeah. Of the, so...
Real quick, you know what this kind of reminded me of? If we're talking about things we reviewed that are present day, what was that? It was a series that we watched that was different stories. Like, there was one where was it Kate Micucci was a part of a bunch of wives club? It was one of the stories. And
oh yeah, was it
about beauty standards and
Cabinet of Curiosities? That was a good one.
Was that Cabinet of Curiosities?
I think that was
story?
Cabinet
it
Curiosity.
Was, right?
Yeah, that was one of the better ones.
That story kind of has the same sort of weird noir feel. And I think that is what you're talking about. Like, if you had, like, we love Romero, but he's missing something sometimes.
I'm not familiar with the director, John.
Yeah,
Harrison,
same.
So I don't know what he necessarily brought to the table for vision wise, because I can see Romero, like, you know, he was a writer, right? Like, he turned out more scripts than he did direct things, you know. There's a bunch of, like, famously unproduced stuff he never did. And
you want to hear something interesting about John Harrison? Yeah. He looks like he's the guy that directed the William Hurt Dune miniseries.
The one on Sci-Fi Channel or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I guess he kind of got his, he was Romero's first AD on a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I've opened up his IMDb and it's just littered with TV. He's the TV guy.
Yeah, this is very, very, very television. Very Everything's very television.
Yeah, I feel like when it's okay to adapt a TV series into a movie, but you do have to, like, level up, right? Budget-wise and look and try things, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to, because it's a movie, there's certain expectations.
So I'm starting to think, oh, he's the guy that composed Day of the Dead.
Oh. That's cool. I love that soundtrack.
And he composed the original Tales from the Dark Side TV series. So I'm wondering if this guy was the first AD for the, like, a lot of the Tales from the Dark Side TV show as well. Mm-hmm. I think that would make a lot of sense, right?
And I think part of, I also feel like Romero, didn't he come up doing documentaries too? So I feel like he kind of has that same look and aesthetic to a lot of his movies. His movies and his work and stuff like that. It's very, you know, invisible. You know, it's very much like,
right.
Like, there's really not a lot of flair or style. For example, like, if you, when you see a Nolan movie, right? Like, every, 5 seconds, there's a cut, right? There's, like, like, certain people have certain...
The dialogue continues for...
Over scenes, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, everybody has certain look and style to their movies. And I don't think he was that guy. I think he just was from a different era, you know, different mindset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, a long way of me saying this movie was just okay for me. I liked it. I thought it was fine, you know. I just... couldn't, like, get into it, and for different reasons each story. Like, for example, the first one, Lot 249, I liked it. Very predictable story, right? But there's really, it's really, this is the most cameo-ish one where you, a lot of familiar faces, right? In terms of, like,
yeah,
a lot of familiar faces. So it's like, oh, this person, I know that person, this person. And it was pretty, like, I guess, straightforward, and notably Julianne Moore's, like, first thing she ever did for film.
Right. She was so skinny.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why I had to point that out. I was just like, it's kind of like you watch it and you're like, this person looks familiar. It's like that type of skinny where like you can't really tell.
And, or even like Steve Buscemi is in this.
Yeah, he's so young. Yeah, yeah dude. Like, but I do like, so spoiler, just Steve Buscemi figures out how to revive this mummy to kill people for him. Mm-hmm. Because he loses out on a scholarship to somebody that doesn't deserve it, like some dimwit.
You know what? I believe you. I don't really follow the plot very much. Yeah, yeah, that sounds correct.
Well, that's what it was. That's why he like wanted to keep it and he was going to use it to get his revenge because he deserved some scholarship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Julianne Moore's boyfriend is basically getting a free ride because she's been kind of orchestrating, making sure that he's successful.
Yeah, because
and her brother Christian Slater is just kind of caught in the middle of it,
right? Yeah,
but then Christian Slater figures out what happened pretty quickly. I think that's what I enjoyed about the story. There's no like that couldn't have been what I saw. He's just like okay, and then I remember distinctly as a kid being like, "No, the mummy's right behind you." No, but he knew, and he had the turkey carver, and he turns around and starts sawing off like the limbs and all that. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh, cool."
Yeah. That part was
but
cool.
Then it ends very creep show, which Romero was a part of, and I guess this guy was the first AD for that movie Creep Show also,
right? Yeah.
The director, the Ted Danson Leslie Nielsen story kind of ends in the same vein where you think that somebody got away with something, but Christian Slater makes a deal with Steve Buscemi, and Steve Buscemi brings back his deceased sister and sister's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, yeah, that, like what happens?
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he turkey carves their limbs off to you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that part was interesting. Like the sort of like, is it body horror that they're like cutting the body of the zombie up?
The mummy does like stab Julianne Moore in the back and then starts shoving flowers into her back because that's like
the best moment. Yeah, one of the better moments in this movie. Yeah. So yeah, that one's pretty good.
The second one's kind of hard to digest.
Yeah, Cat from Hell. Yeah. Yeah. Good premise, right?
Which, again, is a lot like the story about the cockroaches with, what's his name?
Well, this was like a short from Stephen King that kind of seems like, not Pet Sematary. Well, I guess a little bit of Pet Sematary, a little bit of Sleepwalkers, right? Like
a little bit, yeah.
Like
yeah.
In those vein. So
I like that because you're like, where the hell is this cat coming from? But it's like the, I guess all the cats that were horrifically murdered to make this family rich.
Oh yeah.
They're like, you know, they get like this sense of like they sent this cat from hell to like enact revenge.
Yeah. And I think like this is very similar to the other one. Was it Two Evils or whatever about the cat that wouldn't die?
Oh yeah.
Like a Telltale Heart or whatever. Kind of loose adaptation from Two Evil Eyes, excuse me. But yeah, like an unstoppable killer. I feel like this is like the perfect premise for me because as a cat dad, this should have hit harder,
but didn't really do it.
Didn't really do it for me. I felt like the look of it was, you described it as like kind of noir, right? But like,
yeah,
and yeah, that's very true. But it didn't feel like noir, but done very on the budget. I don't know. I know I keep harping on
yeah, 100%
movie and stuff. And honestly, I didn't really like David Johansen's performance in this. I thought he was a little, a better actor could have been doing this part. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me.
But he's David Johansen, so I forget.
I feel like anytime I see him, I can't take him seriously because I feel like I've always seen him in like comedy parts or like over the top.
Yeah, well, it's like everybody's first big introduction to him as an actor was Scrooged, right? I think.
Right. Or even his music. Even though he was like the lead singer for the New York Dolls, but like
then he was Dexter. Yeah, Dexter. I think was what he went by. Yeah, yeah.
Earliest memories is his whatever other persona.
Hot. Like yeah.
Kind of character. So it's kind of hard to digest them.
Just going back to the first story, did you know that that was inspired by an Arthur Conan Doyle, the guy that famously wrote same of it, Watson and Sherlock Holmes, the guy famous yes. Sherlock Holmes stories,
yeah.
I guess wrote something similar to this, and then Michael McDonald, who R.I.P. Wrote a bunch of really great stuff like Beetlejuice, Nightmare Before Christmas, Thinner. Wrote that story too.
The Which one?
The first one, Lot.
He adapted it, yeah, because I imagine Arthur Conan Doyle didn't foresee the 80s and then how to adapt it.
Yeah.
But I can see that being a cool tale to read in whatever he wrote. I'm sure it was like a short or something, probably. I imagine. I'm not familiar.
But my favorite thing about these credit of writers and stuff is nobody wants to own up to writing the last story because obviously it's a super old story.
Yeah, I actually looked at that too. I'm assuming they just adapted it, but they didn't have like... Because the first one is Arthur Conan Doyle.
Conan Doyle, and then, right,
Stephen King wrote Cats from Hell, which was adapted by Romero, and then nobody, like you said, nobody fucking took credit for the last segment. Which, what was the name of it? Does it even have a name? Hold on, I gotta open up the cast because I gotta see
my gargoyle wife.
Lover's Vow. Oh my god, dude, it even has a terrible title. This I can see why you wanted to watch this, because this we had just watched Kaiden,
yeah,
and there's a beautiful...
Oh, let's also talk... There's one more story, the wraparound story of Debbie Harry Matthew Lawrence.
Right.
Matthew Lawrence, not to be confused with Martin Lawrence, two very different
Joey
people.
Lawrence.
Joey Lawrence. Yeah. Close, right?
Yeah.
And it's becomes pretty clear that Debbie Harry is a witch or something, and they're preparing a feast, and she's been feeding...
Is it because she has a broom?
Matthew Lawrence
by
candy.
Her... When she walks in, there's a broom clearly placed.
It's her... Not her vehicle, though, because she came in an SUV. Yeah,
modern times, guys.
Yeah. I think Matthew Lawrence has the Tales from the Dark Side book that she like threw at him to read to keep him entertained. And she's been feeding him nothing but sweets. And he's like, oh, there's a bunch of stories I'm going to tell you. And she's like, all right, well, I have like exactly an hour and a half, like whatever the runtime of the movie is. And he starts telling her these stories to try to like persuade her to prolong time or whatever.
Yeah, this movie was... Like a weird wraparound story, because I'm assuming the witch is going to eat him. So this is like Hansel and Gretel thing.
Yeah, kind of. Something like that, yeah. My only complaint was like, where were all the poops? If he's been in there for like 3 weeks, where are all the poops?
Well, I trust Deborah Harry's character at the foresight and got building codes and was able to build a toilet in her dungeon.
it's a trap door that he gets to poop in.
Or maybe they just... I don't know. I don't have any other thought. I have no idea. Maybe it was like a bucket situation on the wall.
Oh.
Smeared on the walls situation.
Because I'm guessing she never went in there according to how quickly he was able to like trick her and subdue her and get out of the cage.
Well, I thought it was so funny that very early in the movie, he like goes up to the quote unquote cage and he could literally fit through the bars. Like it was pretty I mean, granted he's tied down, so I don't think she like needed anything like a cell, but these were like pretty flimsy bars. He easily could have like fit half his body in it and snuck out. But yeah, like he was chained to the wall, I guess.
Yeah, he was.
There's a little logic behind it, but yeah, there was a very like set into looking bars. I don't know.
I think, yeah, another, like, they did their best with whatever budget they had.
If you had, like, a bad bar person, do you know a good, like, bar person? John, personally.
Some pretty good welders in the industry. But this looks like they had a very small art department.
Gotcha.
Okay,
do you want to move over to Lover's Vow?
Yes.
Okay, so Lover's Vow, I noticed right away the beats seem very familiar to me. Because...
I gotta tell you, this was like my favorite story when I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed the idea that this guy fucked up by doing the right thing, sort of. I don't know. The story's a little muddy, like, now that I'm like older.
Yeah.
Like, he just wanted to share everything with her, I guess. He was like trying to be like...
I don't know. I feel like they completely did a poor adaptation of this story.
Oh, 1,000%. But to be fair, you would not have known about the story at all unless I told you, hey, we need to watch this other movie.
Yes, that's true.
So like, I was like, oh man, I really enjoyed it. Like, I like the idea of like, it's sort of like a scorned lover and like screwing up relationships or whatever. And this guy like really screwed up. And I remember as a kid thinking like, oh my God, the kids are gargoyles too now. Like, oh no, like their lives are ruined. But now that I've seen like the original story and or like a better adaptation of the original story from the 60s, like this is like, I guess, an ancient tale. I'm like, ah, bummer.
Yeah.
Also, James Remar was really, really trying to act. I love James Remar to death, but man, that was like some.
Yeah, he's not his best work. I mean, he's working through a tough script. I give him that. Yeah. You know, I give him a little leniency on that because that's a hard script to act with the rubber, like a, what is it, a rubber monster talking to you and shit. I don't know. It was a weird adaptation. I didn't particularly like it in terms of like, I don't know, changing like they. I feel like the it's a missed opportunity because they could have like added more meaning to as to why he was picked. Like, what about him specifically, the monster?
We needed more like, you were such a handsome man. You were beautiful. I should kill you. Like in Kaiden. Like, you were such a handsome
boy. There was maybe something simple. Like I was thinking, Amelia was thinking like maybe they met in the bar previously and then the monster shows up. But even if it was a slight, even if they could have done something simple, like a simple act of kindness he does for her early, that could have like added layers to it.
The only thing they give that is completely missable is at the very beginning of the short, it kind of starts off with her gargoyle up top, and I'm just guessing that she gets to see him walk in every day.
Right, yeah. I feel like...
But it happens so quick, you don't think about it later.
I almost feel like that needed to be emphasized, right? Like that...
Yeah,
sort of needed to be like, because that makes sense. That tracks, right? Like she's a gargoyle and she sees him and falls in love with him and whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
because it also doesn't explain why she decided to kill that guy.
Yeah.
At least in Kaiden, there's a whole. To be fair, also that the stories were like an hour and a half long, not
right. Yeah,
35 to 40 minutes. But and at least in that, you get the sense that these people were aware that there was like a lady in the snow that steals souls or whatever. Right.
And this is just like a gargoyle monster that nobody's heard of.
Nobody knows that there's gargoyles in LA, New York. I don't know.
Yeah. Toronto.
Chicago.
And I felt like that movie, even though it feels like the kids had the same amount of screen time as these kids in this movie, they were still like more, it felt like deeper, more, there was more to it, I guess, right? Because it felt like they really were a couple that lived together for a long time. They lived in that neighborhood, but they lived in that village or whatever. And the kind of icing on the really makes that story tragic is that there are kids, right? And it feels real. It's like, you lose a little bit of that like supernatural thing that just happened where like some lady told them, you know, I'll spare your life if you, you know, don't ever talk about me or whatever. And then like they even built up the romance.
The gargoyle and like, not like a gargoyle and like, you gotta make a vow to me. They better be perfect. Like it's like a weird.
It was
like,
so
trying
bad.
To be sexy, but it was goofy. Yeah.
This gargoyle talks and boy, does it talk, man? Jeez.
Yeah. It's very Gremlins-y, actually, the more I think about it.
That's a good pull.
And then it just kind of, like, the story just kind of happens. Like, it's not as involved, right, as a Kaiden version, the Lady in the Snow.
Right. That was never, the romance happens pretty quick, and then they're married and their kids, and so it.
It's also, the dialogue was fucking terrible. It's like, oh, it's the 10-year anniversary, and then the daughter, like, I don't know why they told their kids this, but the daughter, who's like, they're toddlers, it's only been 10 years, goes like, oh, you mean the day that daddy pinned you against the wall and you thought he was going to rape you? I'm like, who the fuck wrote this at that point? I was like, why would you have a kid say some shit like
clearly
that?
Clearly a man wrote that.
That's why nobody wants to own up to writing that one.
It was pretty... Awful. Yeah, continue.
Well, yep. And then he fucks up because he feels like he needs to tell her. Like, it's been eating him up for 10 years.
What was the...
Well, I guess they also do this thing where, like, she accidentally pulls a piece of, like, the art that was hidden. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what's this? And so, I mean, she didn't have to do that.
I also feel like making him changing, because, I mean, he was just in the whatever. He was just a farmer in Kaiden. He was just a farmer. Turning him into, like,
an artist. Whatever,
I mean, it's a cool visual thing because he's drawing the monster, but it's like, I don't really have any empathy for artists that live in New York and just selling their artwork. Which
I saw some of that artwork and I was like, I don't know who the fuck's buying this, but cool.
Pam from The Office draws way better.
Michael Scott buys it.
It's a piece of paper. I just didn't like the choices there. Like, I don't know what they could have done differently. It sort of makes sense to make him like this humble farmer guy, this spectacular thing happens or magical thing happens, and so he's able to like live his life. And they talk about how without poor or whatever, how like they're not rich people, but yet he's has love and he has kids, he has a family, you know, he's sort of fortunate for these things, and it gets taken away from him. That's sort of like the pull of Kaiden's story. And this one's like, I don't really give a shit but about an artist,
like he wants to be famous and rich,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wants those things. And I don't know. It's just none of this landed. And not only that, but they change the fucking ending to something very kind of boring and predictable. You know, because like, in my opinion, like Kaiden, I haven't forgotten how that short story ended in Kaiden, you know, where like
she shuffles away and phases through the wall.
Phases through, shuffles away. And then she puts out the shoes that they were talking about making for the winter. And like, they get swept away. So it's like, insinuating that she took him with her, and she was going to be just like, I don't know, forever this ghost that he fell in love with or whatever. Very romantic,
and he has kids to prove it. And
and this was more just like very direct adaptation, just like, no, I told you not to do it, blah, I'm gonna eat your face or something, you know, like it's just
she like rips his throat out with her mouth,
and then she has that transformation scene. It was just like, because when I saw that, when I first originally saw with whatever demon thing, I was like, oh boy, and he was talking, I was like, man, I don't know what this is. I hope I don't see this again before the movie ends. And nope.
It's like, do you ever watch that movie? Shit, what's it called? Every once in a while, I like to watch it. It's goofy with Fred Ward is like a sort of investigator detective, and it's like 40 or something. Yeah. And it's like gangster involved, but the gangsters are using like witchcraft.
Oh, no.
Do you ever saw it? Oh, I'll try to find it.
Oh, yes, yes. I know what you're talking about.
Well, there's like demons and stuff, but it's
Spellbound, but I don't know if that's the name of it.
Dark. Yeah. Anyway, but like
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
the monsters. There's demons in it, and they come up, but they do rip people in half or whatever. But they're also talking and kind of goofy because it's like
I had forgotten that I'd seen that movie because I confuse it with Lord of Illusion or no Nightbreed. I confuse it with Nightbreed. I always confused those two movies for the longest time, and then finally I was like,
cast a deadly spell.
Yes, I think it's something like that. It is something like that along those lines. And I think it was a HBO original movie,
cast a deadly spell. Yeah.
That's crazy. But yeah so like just changing the meaning of it, and then the kids turned into monsters, which is like super weird, and then she ends up turning back into a gargoyle, and I was just like
bringing him with her. Yeah,
just like, oh man, this is none of this emotionally lands at all.
But if it hadn't been for this, though, so this is a prequel to a really excellent cartoon called Gargoyles. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. They should just cast what's his name? Keith. Keith Lee. Yeah. Oh, no, not Keith Lee.
Keith David. Yeah.
I didn't take it out for air. That's a good line. Yeah. One of his best lines.
He finally got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And if you ever watched that reaction video where he's like, I guess he always like watches everybody see who gets the star. And he's like, cool, cool. They're like, and Keith David. He's like, what?
That's funny.
Dude, you deserve it. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Well overdue. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And then wraparound story, Debbie Harry fucks up and Matthew Lawrence is able to shove her into the oven instead.
There's something I missed.
And then he eats an apple or something.
why was he able to basically say out loud the things and then it would happen? What happened there? What did I miss? You get what I mean? Like, why was he able to be like,
oh, that he's telling the final story. I think it's just, it's a little bit like the last story in Kaiden, actually, where the dude was writing the things and he never finishes them. Right. That's kind of what it felt like, but like he's just saying these things out loud, I think, to distract her, and
so he's like the narrator.
Just working
he
out.
He didn't realize he was the narrator and that he could change the ending.
Yeah, I guess.
It's not very satisfying. And then he does like breaks the what is it, the fourth wall, and says something funny. I don't know if I could. I was kind of checked out on that.
Yeah, he's like, well, that's one tell from the dark side. No, he doesn't say that, but the movie. He's like, get a load of this, tell us from the dark side, the movie, and then it ends.
Yeah, it's really good. I That was kind of it. Do you have any thoughts before we rate the movie? Or?
Nah, I just know I'm going to rate it higher than
we'll you. We'll see. I don't know. You're going to pull a 4.6 on me.
No.
Okay, we'll see.
4.7.
All righty, John. How many
4.8.
How many sexy spooky bones do you want to give?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give me? Sexy bones.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to get Tales from the Dark Side. The movie, 7 Sexy Spooky Bones.
I'm going to say 5. I don't know if that surprises you or not, but I'll say 5. I there's potential here. I did like parts of it. It's just there was...
That's maybe higher than I thought you were going to
do. I think it's right down the middle. I don't think it's bad at all. Like, I mean, yes. No, there are really bad things in it that I didn't like, but I mean, I can't, come at it from like... because I think because you have such a heavy nostalgia for it that like I don't want to be here like, oh no, this is fucking garbage.
It's
yeah
sucked.
Like no, yeah. How you felt about it, there's a lot of stuff that when I was younger I remember, you know, fondly.
Okay, in all realness, compared to Suburban Screams, which one did you think was more entertaining?
That,
you know what, maybe, that's not fair. I can't even think of a single story from Suburban Screams anymore.
The one with the phone calls, that's the only one I remember. And the
that was so dumb. I was like,
the guy,
well, that was a story. Like when it ended, I was like, okay,
guy was haunted because he was black or something in the woods. Yeah, it was like a racist ghost or something in the woods, or I don't know. I'm surprised I got those two. I've tried to vividly push all those memories out of my head, but
it's funny, we talk shit about Blood Red, but I think I remember every single story.
Right, yeah. That's true. But yeah, no, I think it's fine. I think it's a fine adaptation. I do love anthologies, so I'll never say no to anthology. We reviewed many anthologies, so. Alrighty. All right, guys, girls, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky.